previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I would assume that you can't be prosecuted twice for the same crime, and I would assume there cannot be a presidential directive to change this. Or can there be with a new president that starts on Friday?
Good question.
Although he's not starting until Monday.
Monday's his first day.
Apparently going to Florida to play golf.
Well, he's got the weekend.
Which we all would do if we had the opportunity.
Obama's going to Palm Springs to play golf after he pieces out. And Trump, oh, but Trump is actually now the president. But now, that's not important.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
And plausibly live from an undisclosed third floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We're on the air with Tori Clark and Gary Braun and Michael Kornheiser. And Nigel will do the news and run the board. And, it is actually in the Constitution that January 20th is Inauguration Day. So it's not like nobody can say, so when do I start? What, the 21st, 22nd, the 18th? No.
The 20th's on a
you
Friday,
start
though.
On the 20th. And the notion, I'm going to start Monday. I'm going to take Saturday and Sunday.
He's going to put in a few hours tomorrow.
I'm going to hit some balls. So good. Just good. If I were younger, this might alarm me. It doesn't. It just delights me.
Batten down the hatches, though.
It delights me.
Big old target on our back those couple of days.
So I wake up this morning and I do what I often do, which is I turn on SportsCenter to see what's going on. And I read the crawl and I see that Novak Djokovic is out. He's out of the Australian Open in the second round. He's beaten by a guy named Eisteman. That's his last name, Eisteman, who is, I believe, from Uzbekistan.
That's right.
Wow.
Who's wrong? You look at me.
You've been to some of the stands.
I'm no Uzbek.
But you've been to some of the stands.
I've been to Kazakhstan.
But you haven't been to Uzbekistan.
No, but Uzbekistan borders Kazakhstan to the south.
You've been to Uzbekistan?
Three times.
Turkmenistan? Tajikistan?
As my husband pointed out, most people go through their lives never going to Uzbekistan. I went three times.
Talk to us.
What's there? Tennis courts? What do you got? What do you remember?
I want to be as respectful as possible.
Okay.
Uzbeks?
It was like a scene from a Will Ferrell movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Borat?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So
I just want to be nice and respectful.
All right, so we'll get out of this.
Uzbeks are lovely people.
Well, so this guy beats Djokovic, who is he like the 27-time defending champion in Australia or something like that?
He's won a number of them.
He's won six. So
he's won six?
Yes, this is going
to be. And he's out in the second round.
You've got to lose at some point.
I think I saw that he's got a terrible record against this bloke.
How many times could they have played?
They've played a few.
Well, they played the Uzbek Open.
Dennis Eisteman.
Eisteman, yeah.
I've never heard of him.
Eisteman apparently owns him.
Yeah, that's great. So that's sports news that we can talk about at length, although we won't. And then we got the Kevin Durant stuff. Kevin Durant, this is great. Kevin Durant gets 40 at home against Oklahoma City. Golden State wins big. They win by 20-plus. That's his season high. It's Kevin Durant's season high is 40. His second high is 39, and he got that against Oklahoma City. So Jay Adonde, doing the post game, does what any good reporter would do, and he says, we got 40 tonight. He got 39 the last time. This can't be coincidental. And we all know it's not coincidental. We all understand that Kevin Durant wants to bury Russell Westbrook and wants to bury Oklahoma City, and it's very, very personal. And Kevin Durant just says, what are you talking about? No. And he ducks the question. And Adonde says, well, you and Westbrook were going at it pretty good in the third quarter. What was that about? And he goes, what are you talking about? I don't remember that. And he goes, come on, everybody remembers that. And he goes, No, we're just focusing on winning. And so Adonde looks at him and goes, yeah, thanks for your time. Because it's useless.
What can you do at that
point? It's absolutely useless. So two things happen in that game.
Now, they did hold Russell Westbrook to a very modest 27, 15, and 13.
Yeah, Russell Westbrook is fantastic. Russell Westbrook, two things happened with Russell Westbrook. One was he took the ball in his hand as if it was a loaf of bread and walked eight steps before dribbling it to sort of inbound it. What are you doing?
Just to clarify, after a made bucket by the Warriors, the ball was inbounded to
Westbrook.
Russell Westbrook, who, while cradling it under his right or left
kept
arm,
walking.
Just walked up the floor five steps, I think it was. I just looked at it again and counted them.
What was
five?
What is that? You can't do that.
I'm not sure. Forgot the rule?
I guess. I don't know what happened. He just felt he's above the law. Also in the game, Zaza Pachulia, who is now the only big man for Golden State, had a flagrant one against Westbrook. It's in the same position on the court that Draymond Green had the flagrant one against LeBron James, and then stood over him. And apparently this violates all the codes of masculinity. You can't
excessive right. display of testosterone.
Can't crow.
Yes, it's not
can't
yet.
Crow.
Like
can't
when
preen.
Ali just stood over
exactly.
Liston.
Exactly. Then it was do, cool. Now
you
uncool.
Can't do that. So Westbrook after the game said, "You know, I'll get him back." God only knows what this means with Westbrook, a guy who clearly bears a grudge. We understand that he bears a grudge because he hates.
You don't
Kevin
stir
Durant.
A pot of crazy. You know, right. you do not want to stir.
He
a pot
hates
of crazy.
Kevin Durant because, and to be fair about this. This is Kevin Durant is the protagonist in this. Kevin Durant walked away from Oklahoma City and never told Westbrook. He didn't
even text him. Didn't even pull an Edsel.
Nothing. Didn't pull a Randy Edsel. He hasn't texted him. They haven't talked to this day. They haven't talked. So when people think, okay, well, Westbrook, he's tough to deal with. Durant's the guy who started this. It's Durant. Don't
yeah.
you agree?
Yeah.
What do you make of
that? I have a non-mom opinion on this.
Okay.
And you guys often talk with wonderment in your voice about he hates him. He's got a grudge against him.
Yeah.
I think about how many games these guys, how many games in a season for the NBA?
82.
That's a lot of games, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of games to get pumped for, to care about, those kinds of things. Anything that gets them motivated, and I think hatred for one another, hatred that other guy might be better than I am, I think that's all that keeps them going sometimes.
So you don't think that Kevin Durant, after playing with Russell Westbrook for 4 or 5 years, after putting their arms around each other all the time in victories and in defeats, owed him to just say, hey, I'm leaving?
No, he owes it to everybody to try to beat him, right?
Well, they're not mutually exclusive.
I don't know. I don't think you can balance and compromise those feelings. I think it's got to be hatred.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Westbrook hates him now. Hates him. But Westbrook can't beat him. He can push the rock up the hill all he wants. He's not going to. Golden State's better, right?
Yeah.
Watch, Golden State's better. They're better.
I think there's a tough psychological moment when you look at someone whom you had played with for so many years and you realize he made what was a reasonable choice in terms of winning now. And you look at how narrow the window is for winning in any mm-hmm. professional sport and you see that hatred and you balance it against your friendship and where you had been, but you look at it from a purely competitive and, you know, economic standpoint of winning and say, he did the right thing.
Yeah, well, the realization that, you know what, he's better off
he is.
With them than he is with me.
He is. Westbrook has to have profound anger and jealousy.
Westbrook is the kind of guy, though, for whom that would be incredibly motivational, you would think.
Yes.
When I say he's the kind of guy, I don't know him, but based on how he plays, he seems like a guy who's fueled by anger, jealousy, and rage.
Anger.
Yeah.
Do you see the seasons that Harden and Westbrook are having?
Yes.
I mean, they're just way above everybody else, and they're not as good a player. They're not as good as LeBron's the best player. But their season is miraculous.
Which 0.1% of professional athletes are not fueled by anger, right? I think one of the reasons Tom Brady is so good this year is because
he's
hates
angry.
Yeah. Goodell.
He does.
Hates
and should.
Him.
And should.
And that motivates him in ways he never would have been otherwise.
We will have Tim Kirchin later in
Dennis
the show.
Dennis Istomin, by the way.
I think, is it Istomin or Istomin?
Sure.
They were saying.
Istomin, largely reported as being from Tashkent, which I believe is the capital of Uzbekistan, but maybe Tori could confirm it.
I believe so, yeah.
He was actually born in Orenburg and moved there when he was 3 months old. I just thought I would share that.
What country is that in?
Also Uzbekistan.
Oh, okay, because I'm unfamiliar with
yes,
that.
Yes, and he's coached by his mother, who introduced him at an early age, and he was in a car crash in 2001 on his way to an event. So born in, what would that make him? He was born in 86.
Born in Babylonia, moved to Arizona, King Tut.
So at 15, he was in a car crash that kept him away from tennis for 2 years.
Wow.
Doctors initially stating he would never hold a racket again. But he's battled all the way back to now all the way up to 1/17th in the world.
Thank you for that update.
Yeah.
Dennis Istomin update.
How great is the computer service that we have in this particular
room?
That's
what we have.
That, we can do that.
Yeah, we have that special wire service.
All right, so we've got three people in the Hall of Fame. Jeff Bagwell, Tim Raines, and Ivan Pudge Rodriguez. Two of them, I believe, suspected to be steroid users, right? Bagwell and Rodriguez?
Right.
Right, over a period of time. One of them was great. Pudge Rodriguez was great. He's one of the greatest catchers of all time. Jeff Bagwell, he's okay. He's good. Tim Raines, he's good. There's story after story after story, and we will ask Kirchin about this, about how Tim Raines, his career got burnished as time went on by the fact that analytics people said, well, he did this and he did that, and he didn't get appreciated for this. Mm-hmm. And my feeling is he's a very good player, but it's the Hall of Fame. It's the Hall of the Great. It's not the Hall of the Very, Very Good. So I'm a little bit surprised. And finishing fourth and fifth, Trevor Hoffman and Vlad Guerrero. There's no way. Vlad Guerrero is a Hall of Famer.
Well, Trevor Hoffman, just a couple of votes out, apparently.
Right, right. Yeah. 74% of the vote.
Right.
Vlad Guerrero is a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We understand that. But there is no way in the history of baseball, there is no conceivable way that Vlad Guerrero and Trevor Hoffman compare to Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. They do not. They're not in the same paragraph. They're not. And Vlad Guerrero should be in the Hall of Fame. Clemens got 54.1% of the vote. Bonds got 53.8% of the vote. That's very good
bumps
for them.
Bumps for both of them.
They've moved up. They bumped. So we begin to think that they are going to get
Schilling,
in.
Schilling, you saw, down.
50, he went down. He's yeah. Well, because he's not.
And Sammy, again, like right in that 8%. But the
it's hard to believe. Sammy Sosa had 3 years over 60 homers.
Bonds and Clemens, I think we're within one vote of each other. It's interesting. It's got to be like the exact same people voting for them. But the thing that was interesting to me is, how did someone vote for one of them and not the other? I forget which one it was that had
Don't
one more vote
that.
Than the other.
Do you, Tori, do you think the word transparency has become a catchword in the culture for just about everything? Do you think that secret ballots are bad? Do you think that a person has the right to have a secret ballot if somebody's voting for the Hall of Fame and they are in the process of being baseball writers and they go to games all the time? Do you think they have the right not to reveal their ballots? Because starting in 2018, I guess I don't know if that's this year or next year in terms of voting.
Well, this is 2017.
But I don't know where the voting is.
This would be happened in 2016.
So, yeah, so I don't know. But it said starting in 2018, you have to reveal your ballot all the time. You think that's fair?
Funny you should ask. There was a discussion at the bar at Passion Fish last night in Bethesda among self-described amateur sports fans about that.
And
Passion Fish.
Oh.
Got a dreadful great sports bar, sculpture right? in front of it, which should just be destroyed.
I wanted to use that as the name of the restaurant.
Well, bummer.
Passion Fish. Sorry. Passion Fish. Anyways, but pretty good.
Maybe
pretty,
I'll use Clyde's.
Pretty good bar scene and good television. Oh, there need to be at Chad, soon to be
there's
renamed. We need more television.
Oh, they're ordered.
We had to knock some regulars out of their seats.
Yeah, the socialite's all over that.
Expensive TVs too.
Yeah,
we talked about
spending
the voting.
My money. Well, actually, it's Michael's money. So Elizabeth's money.
We talked about the voting. I personally think everyone should be accountable. Should be able to say this is for whom I voted. But
do you think you should? Do you think that you, when you walk out of the polling booth? On a November day, should be forced to tell people.
Well,
that's not a private citizen. Yeah,
I mean, this is not the voting for the Hall of Fame is like that's a responsibility bestowed upon certain people. It's not like an individual right.
It's a different constituency. So I think they should. But I thought the more interesting thing last night was people talking about, you know, with the exception of Rodriguez, right? The other guys, if you're an amateur sports fan and you're not completely addicted to baseball, you don't really know those names. And you go, okay, where's Clemens, right? Where's Barry Bonds? Oh, well, you know, they were juiced. Well, those guys were too. So there was a little of who are these guys and why did they get picked? And if guys who are known to have been on performance-enhancing drugs got picked, then what happened to Barry Bonds?
Bagwell was very, very,
I know,
very
but I
good.
Never really got it. He was very good.
Very, right? very good. I don't know that he's a Hall of Famer. Yeah, Reigns was very, very good. I didn't think that.
Pudge was one of the best ever at the position.
Yeah, he gets in. He gets in.
How about submitting blank ballots, which could impact a player's ability to stay at the threshold to stay on the ballot in the future?
What do you mean?
So if you don't if you get a certain threshold, you can't stay on.
Right.
But just the
right.
idea that a lot of these are just swing votes. So if you submit a blank ballot to try and prove your point,
that hurts people.
Hurts yeah. people.
That hurts
burns
people.
Them gets for you.
Yeah.
It gets by the way,
under.
It was Clemens Sammy who had Sosa. One more vote than Bonds.
Sammy Sosa. What did he get? How many percent? Like
Sosa? I think it was 8. Here, I'll find
Sammy
it.
Sosa had
8.6%.
3 years over 60.
Here's the
nobody's
deal.
Ever done that.
Out of 442 ballots, he had 38 votes.
Wow.
How can you not think, I don't care what he injected into his system, how can you not think he was one of the greatest hitters of all time?
Well, if you're going to reject him for what he put into his system, fine, but then reject everybody.
Well, they didn't reject Rodriguez.
Is that does that dog Manny Ramirez?
Sure.
Yeah, he was 20.
I don't know what's going to happen to David Ortiz. But but last year things changed when Mike Piazza, who was widely suspected, no proof, and he said he never did it, but was widely suspected of using performance-enhancing drugs, got in. He did.
Right.
So, all right. Well, so Kirkjian, we'll talk to him later, okay? But not now.
Later means later.
Yeah, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to have Ron Jaworski when we return to Pick Games. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Hey, what's the word for large blaze?
Sorry about that.
What was that?
Oh, it's sometimes
large blaze conflagration.
Sometimes
that's
when
the word.
When I bring up audio or stories to for the news,
conflagration.
The website.
Am I right on this? I think I'm right on this.
You are
Inferno.
Correct.
The website has a pop up that the video starts playing. So my apologies.
Can
for
I
that.
Do the SeatGeek read?
You absolutely can.
This is the SeatGeek
kind
read.
Of websites.
SeatGeek is the smart way to buy and sell tickets for live events. The NFL playoffs are here. There's two games left this week and in the Super Bowl. Each game is a can't-miss experience. You can use it to find the best deals on tickets to NBA and NHL games, college basketball, and concerts. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck, and that's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You will immediately see any underpriced seats. You'll be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all, listeners to this fine podcast will get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, you download the SeatGeek app. Let me spell that for you. It's SeatGeek. You download the SeatGeek app. You go to the settings tab and you click add a promo code, promo being short for promotional, I assume. You enter the promo code Tony, T-O-N-Y. I am spelling this out for you people. Maybe you should write it down. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Tony today.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Blair St. Amand in Elkridge, Maryland, and he writes, "It's a sampling of my college band Spork's musical prowess. We made it into the studio a couple of times, and in case you never picked up copies, because they were never made available anywhere, you have my permission to play these songs on the podcast as you see fit. In terms of critical commentary, I'd like to say the name was about a fusion of musical styles, but really we came up with the name Spork after realizing what we were using to eat at Taco Bell all the time. Think outside the bun, indeed." Michael, if people want to send music to us for our exclusive use, how do they do it?
Please email jingles at tonykornheiser.com.
Very lovely. Ron Jaworski joins us now. And for the second week in a row, Jaws, like the tortoise and the hare, Jaws sprinted out on Saturday, winning both games, and then lost both games on Sunday. He took all the home teams. He lost the two home games on Sunday. Pittsburgh, he lost, and Green Bay, he lost. What? He is still, Ron Jaworski is still above 500. So if you bet with him every single game, you'd have money in your pocket. But 2 weeks in a row, losing on Sunday, what do you attribute that?
I should only pick Saturday games, I guess, Tony. That would right. Unfortunately, it's mostly college games on Saturday. Right. Saturday in the playoffs, I was hot. Sunday, I just cooled off.
So I need to ask, because you're a quarterback and you understand how this works. Rodgers, Brady didn't do much, but we all know what Brady is. Rodgers was electrifying again, and this is like 6, 7, 8 weeks in a row that Rodgers is electrifying because he doesn't really have his best receiver is out. He doesn't have separation from other receivers, and he's got to buy a lot of time. You were not the runner that Aaron Rodgers is. When you look at Rodgers in particular, you know, guys like Steve Young, Fran Tarkenton, who are different quarterbacks than you were, but when you look at Rodgers, what do you think?
I'm absolutely amazed the way he's playing. You know, he was in a slump earlier this season.
Yeah.
Prior to that Eagle game, I believe they had lost four in a row. They have not lost since then. And he just took this team and put it on his shoulders. And he has incredible arm talent. I think Tom Brady might be the greatest quarterback of all time, but maybe the most talented quarterback of all time just might be Aaron Rodgers. The story still has chapters to be written, but the way he's playing right now, carrying this Green Bay Packer team, and when you consider all the things that have gone wrong for the Packers this year on the defensive side, on the offensive side, the wide receivers, the running backs, this has been one of the hottest streaks I've ever seen a quarterback get on. The play he made to Jared Cook was one of the best plays you will ever see. It was not only an accurate throw, timed perfectly, but throwing to his left, moving to his left, running to his left, generating that type of velocity was just remarkable. It was a great play, and he's been making those great plays for the last 2 months.
So this is the part that I want to get to. When you watch quarterbacks in the main, they wind up to throw the ball. Even Brady winds up to throw the ball. Aaron Rodgers, it is a flick of the wrist, and it is coming out of there at 90 miles an hour. I've never seen that. I'm sure you have. I'm sure you know quarterbacks who have that same ability where they don't have to bring the ball back a long way, where they just fire it with their shoulder seemingly at a right angle to the body and not moving all the way back. When you watch that, what do you think?
I think this is the only guy that can do it the way he does it. He's very uncommon in his mechanics.
Yeah.
You know, I sit in my office in NFL Films. I look at all these quarterbacks. I'll go there in the off season, study all their throws during the regular season, develop a template for each quarterback. You know, footwork, mechanics, torque, arm angle, yeah, throwing slot, all those things. I look for all those things being beautifully done. Then you look at Aaron Rodgers. He does none of that beautifully except the result. You know, the guy has incredible arm talent, incredible velocity, and ball placement for the most part has been just incredible. So sometimes you just got to throw out all the mechanics, the wonk that I am for mechanics, and say, just let the guy go play. And as he said himself, that last play to Cook, he drew it up in the dirt, you know. So that, sometimes you just got to go out and play, and that's what Aaron Rodgers is doing right now.
I'm wondering, and it's hindsight is 20/20, obviously, but I'm wondering, he fell a lot in the first round in the draft. I think he went 26 or 28 or something like that. And did Alex Smith go one that year?
Yes.
And Aaron Rodgers fell. And do you think any of that is because people get in a room and they say what you just said? They say, look, it doesn't look right. There's something that doesn't look right there. I know the results are good, but somehow I think that he's not going to be much because he does not have classic mechanics for a quarterback.
Oh, absolutely right, Tony. I know these scouts, I know these player personnel directors, and you know they do get hung up on some of those things. And hey, I don't bemean them for that. That's just the way it is. They look at the guy that has the perfect mechanics, and Aaron Rodgers does not. He did not when he was coming out. But the guy is a playmaker, and Tony, you were around. You and I were in Green Bay.
When
Brett Favre was the quarterback and Aaron Rodgers was the backup, and he was learning how to play the position. Remember, he sat on the bench for the first 4 years. This guy was learning, and Mike McCarthy and the Green Bay Packers, I've always said this, and I still believe this, have the best offseason quarterback camps of any team in the NFL. So Aaron Rodgers worked his tail off in the offseason to get stronger because, you know, Brett Favre would go back to Mississippi and Aaron Rodgers would get all the coaching.
Yeah.
So he got better. He worked harder. His arm got quicker. His arm strength got better. He clearly became a better quarterback working out in Green Bay in the offseason. So he did pay a steep price to become great.
So it's interesting to me because, again, you did this for a living, and nobody that's a pro quarterback has a bad arm. You know, I mean, you guys can all throw it. You can all throw it 60, 65 in the air. You can all do that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
when you see him, isn't there a part of you that says, well, I didn't have that. I did not have that.
Oh, no question. No question. Yeah, you know, I did have the arm strength. Hell, they call me the Polish rifle. You know,
absolutely.
I could throw the ball, but I was one of those guys, you know, I had to be on my back foot. I had to have the good weight transfer. Everything had to be right. He's just one of those freaks of nature. You know, he could just flick the ball, as you said
a moment ago,
and that ball's going, you know, 40 yards at about 65 miles an hour. He's that talented.
Yeah, he throws darts. It's really something. All right, let us get to the games. Pittsburgh is getting 6 at New England. New England did not play well against Houston. Pittsburgh will not be afraid of New England. Pittsburgh comes in the last half of the season with, I think, more sacks than anybody else. And as all you quarterbacks know, if you can rush Tom Brady up the middle with 3 and no more than 4, you can beat New England. If you rush with 5 or 6, he beats you. It's a very simple mathematic equation. Who do you like in this game?
Yeah, you'll be hearing that all week from everyone. Yes. You know, that to get him off his spot and his launch point and all that, and it all sounds good when we get on these TV shows and talk about it. You know, the reality is it's very difficult to get Tom Brady off his spot and to move his launch point because he gets rid of the football so quickly, and that's how they run their offense, and they do a tremendous job with matchups, creating favorable matchups for the personnel that he has. He doesn't have great wide receivers,
nope,
but they're still able to use them effectively, and Pittsburgh is a zone team. And again, zone teams, Tom Brady usually eats their lunch. He really does. Last week he struggled because the Texans played man-to-man, and they did a great job on the receivers of the New England Patriots. Steelers, a zone team. I like Brady. I like the Patriots.
Is it you like them because you really like them, or is there some flaw in Pittsburgh, or is it home for New England? Because I don't.
Well, New England has owned Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but I mean, without Gronkowski, I don't think they're as potent as they were by a long shot. I really don't.
Well, they're not. They're clearly not. I mean, you know, Rob Gronkowski is the best tight end in the league. So you lose a guy like that, you're obviously hindered in what you're going to do. But Martellus Bennett has certainly stepped in and done a terrific job. You know, they also use their backs very well. And the key will be James White, Deion Lewis, getting matched up against linebackers. We saw it last week. Two touchdowns. You get Deion Lewis, James White, matched against linebackers. Touchdown. That's what they do, create those matchups. And with Pittsburgh, you know, Artie Burns is a rookie, and he's been playing very well. But as I've watched his tape, people run by him. I think you'll see double moves. I think you'll see Tom Brady go after Artie Burns.
Okay. The other game is Green Bay at Atlanta. The conversation is about Aaron Rodgers. We spent a lot of time talking about it. And there's a question here. Atlanta's a very good team. Atlanta at home is really good, and they score a million points. So the over-under here has been set at 60, which is high, but I mean, I would probably take the over on this. My question about Rodgers is this. At what point does the magic stop? Do you know what I mean? You can't they lost six out of their first 10, so they are a vulnerable team. Is this the week where a team like Atlanta, coached by a defensive-minded guy, is this the time they lose it? They just lose it.
Yeah, I like Atlanta in this game, Tony. And this is going to be, you watch this game, and it might be an Arena Football League game between the Philadelphia Soul and the Washington Valor.
Yes.
This will be high scoring.
Yes.
You know? This is going to be a high scoring game. Hey, we just spent 5 minutes talking about Aaron Rodgers. Plug in the tape and watch Matt Ryan. He is just as hot. Maybe not the big victories that Aaron Rodgers has gotten, but Matt Ryan is the league MVP and deserves it. He has played well. And they have the most balanced offense coming into the playoffs. You have four hot quarterbacks, but what other dimensions do the other teams have? None of them have what the Atlanta Falcons have. You know, they use a lot of two tight end. You know, on PTI, I've been breaking that down all season long. Two tight end, two back. You got a Coleman, you have a Freeman. You got guys that make plays running the football as receivers. I like their matchups against the Green Bay defense in that area. Julio Jones is one of the best receivers in the league. Mohamed Sanu has been playing great. Justin Hardy's showing up. And the other thing is the offensive line in Atlanta is playing very well right now, and we've been hearing it on, you know, all the playoff games, the acquisition of Alex Mack from the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
It seems to whoever the Browns let go, they make great plays somewhere else. Isn't that amazing?
They do.
Taylor Gabriel, Alex Mack, these guys, where'd you play before? Cleveland, you know? They just let talent go out the door in Cleveland, I guess.
All right, so you're going to take Atlanta and you're going to take New England two home games. Thank you, Jaws.
All right, thanks, Tony.
Ron Jaworski. And as we say every week, if we just gave you Ron Jaworski, that would be more than enough.
Plenty.
But we give you more, don't we?
And now it's time for Reginald the Monkey.
Yeah, so I went down to the zoo.
Reginald, I just should point out, Reginald also 2-2 last week.
Yeah, big Sunday.
But he's below 500.
Yeah, it's
always above 500.
Not been a good year for the monkey.
No, well, not a terrible year. I mean, a terrible close.
Right.
When the monkey went 0-3 about 3 out of 4 weeks.
I have a theory about Reginald's performance this year.
What is it?
Well, I think he's upset that Bao Bao is leaving.
Bao Bao is that panda.
Yeah. I think he's been hearing for a while this might happen, and he tried to change it.
Are we going to be able to rent another? We rent pandas now, don't we, in essence? Are we going to be able to rent another panda?
At least with an option to buy it.
Well, it depends on how things go.
I don't think we have the option to buy the panda. Canada.
It's not a lease to buy.
I think it's a rent deal.
But I think China is particularly happy with America right now, so maybe they'll say
China.
I don't think they're particularly agreeable to giving more pandas. But who knows? Who knows? Bow bow. Though yes, very close
it's
with
bye
Reggie.
Bye
bye bye bow, bow bow. Right. So I went down there, and he was very busy in his cage. As it turns out, he was preparing for his performance at the inauguration. Yes, he's going to be.
What's he gonna do?
He's doing a little magic, a little soft shoe dance.
Good.
And then he's going to close the whole thing by wrestling a bear live on stage.
Wonderful.
Nice. So that's the whole Russia thing.
Right? Yes, we think it might be a metaphor for Russia.
Good.
So he took some time out from his preparations for that to go over some of these games. The first game we gave him was Pittsburgh getting six at New England.
It's a pretty big number. I know, Gary, you just said that New England handles Pittsburgh very well, but six is large.
These games tend to, they're either close or they get away from you. I mean, like look at the Houston.
What is it?
Well, no, Houston's within a touchdown in the fourth quarter. They end up losing by 18.
Right.
You know, so
New England covers. Okay.
Yeah. He just showed me an old video of him arm wrestling in an arm wrestling contest with various members of the Steelers. He beat Joe Green.
Yeah.
He beat Rocky Blyer. Oddly enough, he lost to Bobby Brister.
He did.
Yes. Strong wrist, that one. So, but he'll take, obviously, he's got ties to Pittsburgh. So he'll take Pittsburgh in the 6 points. And then we gave him the Green Bay getting a 4.5 at Atlanta. And this was lovely. I know this is something you thought about doing for a long time. He showed me a nice a video of him on a river cruise through Europe with Aaron Rodgers, Sterling Sharp, and Jordy Nelson.
Jordy Nelson, what's he doing on a river cruise? He's not even playing.
I don't know. This is something. This is obviously from this past summer, but
so he'll take Green Bay.
Yes, and there was one more bet that he really was excited about, and this is the over/under for the length of Donald Trump's inauguration speech. Now that number is 19.5 minutes.
Is that what is being listed?
Oh my God, that's stealing money.
I'm taking the over.
Yes,
I'm taking the over because he's going to get sidetracked a number of times.
Now the forecast, it could be like cold and rainy. Now he'll be covered, I guess.
Yeah,
so maybe.
Reginald's going to take the under. On
the
that
under?
One. Yeah. He
very
thinks it's going to be very terse.
Right.
I won. I'm moving on. There's also bets about which country Trump will visit first. The leaders in the clubhouse are Canada or Mexico. Reginald thought Florida was a country, so he was picking that one. But do you have any?
Is there really which country he'll visit first?
Yes.
Isn't it Iceland? So he can meet his buddy Putin?
Has he already announced it yet?
I'm here in Iceland.
Iceland?
Iceland.
I hope he wakes for the summer, because that's why they call it Iceland.
No, that's Greenland. I think you have them backwards.
They're both very cold. All right, we will take a break. When we come back, we will have news with Nigel. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Problems with my love connection, so she.
The letter says, my name is Jackson Harar from Arlington, Virginia. I'm a longtime Little and a musician on the side. You have played songs by my brother Nate Harar, aka Dalton. So here are two great songs by my band, Burn the Ballroom. I like that. That could be a name of a restaurant. With Alan Gant on vocals. One is Crazy, one is Chariot. This is probably Crazy. Hope you can use these, and thanks for supporting local artists. Michael, how can local artists and national artists send us their music?
They can send it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And how
local artists aspiring to be national artists.
And how can they buy gear, including the very, very hot hooded sweatshirt?
They can go to shop.tonykornheisershow.com.
Okay, so that's wonderful. Nigel is here with news.
I am indeed, Mr. Tony, and I want to follow up from what we talked about in the show open with some other odds, gambling odds for Donald Trump.
Okay.
They're putting it 4-1 odds.
What are the odds he quits after 10 days?
Well, 4-1 odds.
Just bored.
4-1 odds that he gets impeached, Trump, within the first 6 months of his presidency. Gives him just 7-4 odds of completing the 4 years. Would you take that bet?
I am one of those people who believes that at some point in his term, he will say, I pretty much did everything I wanted to do. We're in better shape now than we've been when I got here. And
didn't need the 4 years. Did it in one.
And I'm done.
Right.
And, and I'm done.
So you would not lay 40 to win 70 that...
No.
Maybe it'll be like, remember the Johnny Carson show when Johnny Carson near the end just kind of bored? And he'd do it 2 or 3 nights a week and then he'd let others do it?
Yeah, maybe he'll let... Yeah,
he'll
maybe
just let Pence do it half
like
time.
A couple nights
that's
a week.
Yeah.
And the best one is the odds of him painting the entire White House gold are 500 to 1.
He's not painting the White House gold. I mean, that's not going to happen.
He's not going to do that. No. The Mexicans are going to do it, and they're going to pay for it. And they're going to love it.
That's not going to happen.
With President Obama leaving, the Republicans have taken control of the Senate and the House, and with the presidency now, they're looking to change many of the laws in the district, including the gun control laws, the physician-assisted suicide, and the ban from the district using local tax dollars to provide abortions for poor women.
There is, payback's rough. In the District of Columbia, where I live and where I vote, the margin for Hillary Clinton was enormous. It was more than 90%. I think it was 92-6, something like that, with 2% write-ins. It was like really, really ridiculously high. And the Republicans are not happy with that. And this is what they're going to do. I don't know if they can do this. I don't know if they can change the minimum wage in the district. I don't know if they can change that very liberal maternity leave policy in the district. I don't know. They have the money.
They can try anything. But what I wonder is, and I'm sure some of them and some of their staffs are thinking to themselves, okay, post-election, right? We're back in business. We got to do things that will make our constituents happy and demonstrate we're going to do what we told them we're going to do. They're going to try to pick some low-hanging fruit that way, and it seems to make sense. But what if then President Trump does what he did with that completely stupid move the Republicans made on the ethics office?
And he boots it.
What if he just does one or two tweets and goes, really? You're really worried about those things when we should be focused on some bigger stuff?
Yeah. To answer your question, this from the copy in the Washington Post, Congress has supreme authority, including veto power, over local laws and voter-approved measures.
No.
It can even reach in and dictate how local tax money is spent if the president agrees, which
seems sort of antiquated, doesn't it?
I mean, you live in the district.
I live in the district. This is why the district wanted home rule. I mean, the district has no votes.
Right.
It has one congressperson, congresswoman, Eleanor Holmes Norton, who's been there for 1,000 years.
But she doesn't get an actual vote.
She doesn't get a real vote. She gets to talk, and people go, oh, okay. And she doesn't actually get a vote. And we have shadow senators.
What's that even mean?
It's nonsense. Shadow senators. The people who run around.
Seems vaguely racist.
Have you ever, even asked somebody, are you the senator? Nobody knows what that is. We really have nothing. We have nothing. So
that margin of victory, Hillary Clinton with 100% of the precincts reporting, Hillary Clinton 90.9%. Donald J. Trump 4.1.
Who's the other?
Can I get some water, please?
Others.
I'm coughing.
Others, not Johnson and Stein, others outranked them with 2.1%.
Thank you.
Gary Johnson 1.6 and Jill Stein 1.4.
Can I? I have to drink some water.
Yeah, drink some water. No, I just got something to
say. Keep talking.
Take the top off.
Michael,
loosen
the
top.
How's that plastic taste?
Michael, this is what happens when they get a little older.
Next time he takes the top off, Tony's going to pour it all over himself and say, why didn't you leave the top on?
Yes. Can I go back to what I was saying during the break? I don't know if I've said this before. This is my feeling about Mike Pence. This is very, very local for me. Mike Pence and his wife rented a house about 6 blocks from where I live. For the month and a half in which they were transitioning from Indiana into where they will start living as of tomorrow. They'll start living in the vice presidential mansion. So I know the neighborhood. And people, again, and this is the most liberal enclave in the United States of America, or certainly up there, along with maybe the Silk Stocking District in Manhattan.
Next to Tacoma Park.
It's right up there. Right, where people stopped shaving their legs as a matter of protest 10 or 12 years ago at Tacoma Park. Tacoma Park. I mean, seriously, deliver me from Tacoma Park. The Tory's laughing. That's true, right? They stopped shaving. So anyway, because Mike Pence has been very vocal being anti-same-sex marriage and is not in tune, it seems to me, with the majority of the country, not the overwhelming majority, but the majority of the country in terms of certain social issues. Everybody is hanging those rainbow flags on. Actually, it is remarkable. Not only are they hanging rainbow flags so that Mike Pence, if he opens his eyes on his street, sees 10,000 rainbow flags. Also, these same people who are hanging the rainbow flags are nailing them into the trees. And you shouldn't do that because you're killing the trees. You're nailing them into trees. They're all over the place. Everywhere there's spare room, there's a rainbow flag. Fine. And there are signs that say this neighborhood trusts women, and there are signs for Planned Parenthood. These are all the things that Mike Pence on social issues has come out on the other side of. My feeling about that is you do that where he works. It's okay. It's okay. I mean, if you don't like what I've done, come to where I work and tell me your work bothers me. But I think he should have a certain amount of privacy from that in his own home. Am I wrong on this? You were in politics for a long time.
You're not necessarily wrong, but and it sounds like such a cliche, but I love it. We live in a country where people can and do express their opinions almost anywhere, anyhow. But I'm with you on the trees. Don't do that to the trees.
Yeah, I should have quickly got into the rainbow flag business.
Right.
My neighborhood right now. And sold them out of the trunk of my car. Where am I off base on this?
I think I like living in a country where people retain the right to do that, but I agree with you. I think, you know,
Michael can tell you this. There have been people who have come up to me by my home and started excoriating me for things I've written or things I've said. And you just want to say, here?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, here?
Sanctuary.
I mean, come on.
Right? Isn't there some sort of buffer zone?
This happened two or three times. It drives you crazy.
It did.
It's just.
And you know, whether you're talking about something you wrote, Or I can see it's far more inflammatory when he's espousing his view and he's now the vice president of the United States. But in both instances, agree or disagree, it takes courage to do that. It takes, you know, the courage and your conviction to do that. And I don't know, you know, if they were doing that to someone in a different circumstance, I won't paint with specific brushes, but the people doing that would likely be brought up on charges.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Anyway, what do you got?
The Wizards. They win again at home.
Yeah, baby.
13th win in a row at home.
I'm stepping away.
Fuego.
Right. I'm stepping away.
Right. They took the Grizzlies 104-101. They are now.
Wall had 25 and 13 assists. Otto Porter, who they told at the beginning of the year, you're not good enough for any sort of a deal. We don't care about you, had 25-7-7. Otto Porter's having a great year.
He is.
They've won 13 in a row at home. They're plus three. They're in fifth place in the Eastern Conference. My criticism? I know what I said. I'm done.
We saw a great tweet from a loyal little Jen Babish who notes your critique of John Wall was the turning point at this point in the season.
So
the way they look at home, getting to that fourth spot could be important. Yeah. You know?
Somebody from the Wizards came by the PTI show yesterday, and I was talking with him. I said, I know I'm hated there. I know that I'm hated for the things I've said. And he said, yeah, you are. You're hated.
Well,
I said, okay.
Well, He didn't use the H word. You're not hated.
I'm hated. And I said,
I think you're trying to elevate yourself.
It's okay. I did it.
How did Coach Brooks enjoy the show?
He wasn't there.
Oh, okay.
So I went on the Rich Eisen podcast yesterday. He has 1.2 million Twitter followers.
Yeah, he's going.
So if I can get 5,000 to listen and 3,000 to stay, that would be good, right?
Yeah, again, telling you any sense of the numbers is just I'm going just, down the rabbit hole.
I just don't know what
it's
I'm
like
talking
giving
about.
A machine gun to a chimpanzee.
So, but Eisen was in town because I don't even know why, certainly not for the inauguration, but he wanted me to come to his podcast studio, and I said no, because he was podcasting on New Jersey Avenue.
Oof,
and no. I mean, the time he wanted me to be on was right when you start the show prep
phone
for
works
PTI, it. And if you go down there, it's going to take an hour.
Yes.
You know, so, but it was fine to be on.
Talk on the phone.
And I told the Wilbon airplane dog story.
Which is, you know, the immortal
And as
story.
It turns out, I'm on the air, and there's sort of silence when I get to the punchline of the story and all of that. And then turns out that he's one of the guys that's with Eisen, who I guess is a regular, is a curator of stories like that and tells them all the time. I mean, I didn't know.
He'd already taken that story?
No, but he tells stories like that. He collects stories like that. And I guess that's a regular part of the Rich Eisen podcast. So there was odd silence on the other end when I thought there'd be a couple of laugh lines. I thought somebody would laugh and we would have a conversation about it. But
so no. They know you don't listen.
I don't listen. I don't listen to anything.
Not even this show.
Well, I count.
If you had
in my spare
he
time.
He knows what he says.
I count. Yes. What else do we have?
Sally Jenkins has written a wonderful quote about
Sally Jenkins kills Randy Edsall.
Yeah, so Randy Edsall is back at UConn.
From whence he came.
Yes, and when he returned there, he said, "I just hope I will be able to earn the trust back from you wonderful fans, because what I'm doing now is I apologize for how I left. It was wrong. I take full ownership and accountability of that."
We talked about Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. He was the coach there for 7 or 8 years, and when he took the Maryland job, he didn't say goodbye to his players.
Right.
No.
He texted.
And as Sally points out,
I hated him.
As Sally points out, when another player decided he was going to leave early, he made that player stand up in front of the team and say, "I'm sorry, guys, I'm leaving."
Yeah, I'll do as I say.
Didn't
as I do.
Have the same courage.
It
so,
is a
do that.
Blistering takedown.
So Sally crushes Randy Edsall because Randy Edsall walks back into Connecticut and starts pulling scholarships from 17- and 18-year-old kids.
Yeah, there's some kid, the linebacker named Ryan Dickens, who had been recruited and committed and then, you know, was wearing the UConn shirt around. Yeah.
Well, stayed with the program.
Even when they fired his coach.
And then
loved the program.
2 weeks left in the
He gets
recruiting.
The Goodfellas call. Yeah, it didn't work out. Sorry. What do you mean it didn't work out, coach? Yeah, we don't have a place for you.
So I hated Randy Edsall from the day he took the job, and I hated him for a very specific thing. Randy Edsall was born and raised, if I'm not mistaken, in southern Pennsylvania,
like
southeastern or south central Pennsylvania, near the Gettysburg area, I think. And he's not from Maryland. He's from Pennsylvania. Can we look this up?
Yeah,
where he was born
right now.
And he gets up there and he says, "All my life, I wanted to be the coach of Maryland."
Glen Rock, PA, Tony.
All my life. Can you find out where that is? It's probably near Gettysburg.
York County,
yeah,
southeastern.
Okay. Right. "All my life, I want to be the coach of Maryland." This is an outright lie. There's never been anyone involved in football in the state of Pennsylvania who didn't want to coach Penn State. That's where you want to coach, is Penn State. Sure. Penn State's the powerhouse. You want to coach Penn State. And to say "all my life," so I identified this as a falsehood immediately.
And
set myself against Randy Edsall.
That's a good motivation. That's a really good motivation.
And to your credit, I don't think you actually talked about that much more than every day for the entirety
of his
tenure at Maryland.
And they fired him, and because they gave him a chance.
Right.
He did okay. He didn't do great.
May I say something about Sally's piece? If you've been around as long as we have and you read as much as we do, you can usually get through a story pretty quickly or get through a piece like that pretty quickly. You know where the good stuff is. You know where the context is.
Now you linger on this.
Yes,
this one,
time.
But
all good.
From start to finish,
yeah,
and
yes.
to the very end, the intensity and the venom and the substance with which she crushes him. Just, you read all the way to the end and go, "That was an amazing piece."
Yeah.
That's a great takedown.
Sledgehammer. That is
brilliant.
A sledgehammer. All right.
One last story, and this is a Florida man, and he said, "Well, it's Thursday. Because I've got some other Florida stories that I will, you know, we won't be able to fit all these in."
So this is a week Florida story.
Well, no, we wanted to get to this last week. We didn't have time for it. But Martin Henderson, age 48, of Largo, decided he wanted to smoke
not
some...
Not Mar-a-Largo, but Largo.
Largo.
Not Key Largo.
Not Key Largo. Largo. Decided to smoke some spice, which is synthetic marijuana.
Yeah, okay.
Makes you act a little bit crazy.
Goofy.
Right. And then decided, you know what I would like to do? I would like to get some sesame seeds for my hamburger bun.
Oh, I guess we did this on PTIs.
He used a butter knife to pry open the door of the mobile home next to him about 2:30 a.m.
Now, that's a critical phrase, the mobile home next to him.
Used a butter knife to pry open the lock.
That's a critical phrase. But wait, because there's more. There's the outfit.
Yes, so when the resident, the owner of the mobile home, woke up, he found a naked man in his kitchen rummaging about looking for sesame seeds.
Wow.
And when the police, you know, said, "What were you doing?" "We're just looking for sesame seeds, man. I mean, that's what you do, right?"
Yeah.
So he's now facing charges of burglary and possession of burglary tools.
Again,
the butter knife.
The mobile home next to him. All right, we will take a break. We will have Old Guy Radio. And when we come back, Tim Kirkjian will join us. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day in honor of the inauguration of the 45th President of the United States of America, when the 42nd President of the United States of America was inaugurated. This was played when Clinton's and the Gores were dancing around to "Don't Stop" by Fleetwood Mac. Fleetwood Mac, in terms of critical commentary, good, not great. Good.
Yeah.
Good, fun, good.
Rumors, one of the great albums of all time.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I like them. Now, Stevie Nicks, great, not good.
Right.
Stevie Nicks
can sing.
Emerges yes. from that whole thing.
And should so point out, since it is old guy, Dolly Parton's 71 today, Tony.
Aww.
Is that right?
Yep.
She's still good. I think
parts
she's still
her.
Very good. I mean, she's I think she's a good actress and a good singer and a pleasant.
Talented.
She seems very
and a lovely person.
Pleasant, right?
Yeah.
Every time you see her, she seems pleasant.
And Miley Cyrus's godmother.
Is that right?
Wow. Tim Kirkton joins us now. So I get up in the morning and they're replaying the Scott Van Pelt show and Timmy's on and I watch this. And I should say this. I think Scotty's very good. I mean, for my purposes, sometimes that show doesn't help me as much as a regular Sports Center does because Scotty goes off on tangents. But I think the talent is so obvious. I mean, I just think the way he does the show, the pace of the show. Am I wrong on this, Tim? He's really good, isn't he?
Yeah, he's really good, Tony, because he is what he is. He's a guy that just loves sports. He does this because he loves sports. And he's acknowledged that if I didn't do this, there's nothing else I could do.
Yeah.
And he thinks ESPN, the newsroom, whatever you want to call it, is like the greatest sports bar ever, except for there's no food and no beer. But it's the same idea. And his love for the games, he goes to the games, Tony. He loves that stuff. That's what makes him so good, is it translates how much he actually loves watching the games, which is what a lot of us do.
And he seems to enjoy his work. It doesn't seem to be an effort. It doesn't seem to be onerous. He likes what he does. I think he's really good. Anyway, so Tim and Scott were talking about the Hall of Fame inductions, and that's where we're going to start. And we're going to start with Jeff Bagwell and Tim Raines and Pudge Rodriguez. And I will just say that one of those three is a demonstrably great player. Pudge Rodriguez is a great, great, great player. I have no problem with him being in the Hall of Fame whatsoever, although Jose Canseco, who's been right about a number of these issues, said that he knows that Pudge Rodriguez took steroids. So that cloud was over Pudge Rodriguez. I thought it was over Jeff Bagwell as well, though not with Tim Raines. I am not certain that Jeff Bagwell and Tim Raines are necessarily Hall of Famers. I assume that you're going to defend that choice. And also, I think we need to talk, because so much has been written about Tim Raines and analytics and how that made his career look better than it did when he was having it. Maybe you could talk about that sort of, I don't know that it's revolutionary, but there's a real difference now in how people are evaluated.
Yes, and the analytics helped get Tim Raines into the Hall of Fame. One of the advanced metrics we use now is wins above replacement. And from 1981 to 95, that's the prime of his career, the only two players that had a higher WAR than Tim Raines are Barry Bonds and Ricky Henderson, who are two transcendent players statistically.
Yep.
And Tim Raines is third on that list in that time. That is what the advanced metrics did for Tim Raines. But, Tony, look, I disagree. I mean, I know they helped him, but old guys like me saw Tim Raines play in his prime, Tony, in the early 80s. He was breathtaking to watch. He was one of the great dynamic offensive players I've ever seen. He's one of the great leadoff hitters of all time. And it doesn't take advanced analytics to know that he reached base more times than Tony Gwynn did. It doesn't take advanced analytics to know, I know this, that he has the highest stolen base percentage of any player in history with 400 or more steals, and he's got 800 steals. When you take hits, runs, and stolen bases and look at who's got Tim Raines' numbers in all three categories, three guys have that in baseball history. That's why he's a Hall of Famer. The analytics helped, but the other stuff, including your own two eyes, should have told you he's a Hall of Famer.
Okay, so you've been voting for him for a while.
Every year for 10 years, yes.
But others have not.
Correct.
Have not. Can you briefly, if it is possible to briefly explain WAR, briefly explain how this statistic came about and how the comparable numbers are realized?
Well, I can't easily explain WAR, Tony, because nobody can, unfortunately. But it's supposed to be a mathematical formula that essentially tells you, among other things, what you did and when you did it. Now, it doesn't take in really account for, say, a catcher's value to a team as far as running a game and, you know, making sure a pitcher's together that day. It doesn't account for any of that. So it's not the end-all, be-all. It's just something that we should look at. And it can be deeply misleading at times, but when you look at the greatest players of all time, their WAR is the highest. I mean, Babe Ruth's WAR is higher than anyone's, not really close. And Babe Ruth's the best player ever. So in a lot of ways, it's very accurate, and other ways, very misleading. But it's something that a lot of people look at these days.
Can I just, the question I have about it is, does it take into account the people that play when you don't play? Do you know what I mean? If you're not out there, is it the people on your team that play that don't play? Because that, to me, creates another variable here, which is, well, the substitutes on my team stink, and so this guy looks better than he ought to.
Right, and this is where it can be misleading.
That's what bothers me about it, yes.
Right, this is how it's been explained to me. Let's say you're a center fielder, and there are, you know, 29 other center fielders in the major leagues that are terrible, okay? And you're great. Your WAR is going to be much higher than the average center fielder because the rest of them stink. So you may be really good, but you're going to look even better because the rest of the group isn't very good. That's what a wins above replacement kind of measures. But again, Tony, it's really tricky to know exactly what we're looking at here, and that's why it's just one tool.
Yeah.
It's not the end-all, be-all, and anyone who looks at it that way needs to look at other things also.
My philosophical objection to all of these things is that this would be if suddenly somebody said, you know, that you know there was another planet all along, seventh in the solar system. It's been there. Nobody saw it. So we have to change everything. We just have to change everything. And mathematicians and sabermetricians, which is a fabulous word, is a totally invented word. I ought to name the bar sabermetricians. account for people now getting into the Hall of Fame who I don't think are necessarily Hall of Famers. I mean, I'm not going to argue each one individually, but I'm going to look at, like, I think Jeff Bagwell was very, very good. Very, very good. But while he was playing, there were people at his position who were significantly better, you know? So to me, why is he in the Hall of Fame? Have you voted for him every year as well?
Yes. And okay. It took him 7 years to get in, Tony. And I disagree with you on this.
That's fair.
There was no first baseman other than Albert Pujols who was much better than him. And that's because Pujols was much better than everybody.
Right.
At his position. Bagwell scored 1,500 runs, drove in 1,500 runs, and walked 1,400 times. 12 guys in Major League history can say that. Again, WAR, which I should not quote again after our just having this conversation, but first baseman all time, he's fourth behind Gehrig, Pujols, and Jimmy Fox. He's fourth. Most people will tell you that his career compared to Frank Thomas's career is pretty darn close. And Frank Thomas rolled in on the first ballot as he should have.
Yes.
Jeff Bagwell should have gone in on the first ballot for me. And he's one of these guys, Tony, the corny parts about it, he was a great leader. He was a good first baseman. He was a great base runner. And he played a lot of years in that huge Astrodome where it was impossible to hit a home run. And he found a way to hit a home run.
All right. So I stand corrected on Raines, and I stand corrected on Bagwell, and I accept your judgment on that. And I think I have to ask about Bonds and Clemens, and particularly Sosa. Sosa had 3 years over 60. I mean, I get that we all assume that these guys used performance-enhancing drugs. But I think a lot of people felt that way without necessarily having proof about Mike Piazza, and they feel that way about Pudge Rodriguez. Do you see that door now open, and do you see Bonds and Clemens getting in, and do you see Sosa getting a higher percentage of the vote, which is so amazingly low for him statistically?
Right. I think, and I'm guessing here, Tony, I think Bonds and Clemens are going to get in after 10 years. I think it's going to take till their 10th year on the ballot, but with Piazza going in last year with suspicions, with Bagwell going in this year with suspicions, and Pudge Rodriguez going in on the first ballot with suspicions, I think that's only going to help Bonds and Clemens as they move forward. And they got a really nice spike. I thought it would be even bigger They went from essentially the mid-40s to the mid-50s this year. And with 5 years to go, there's a chance now that maybe in that ninth or tenth year on the writer's ballot, they will get in. I sense a softening, and I think that softening is going to continue. I don't think Sammy Sosa is ever going to get in, but even he moved up a little bit and at least stayed on the ballot.
Has the voting block changed that much? It was a good story. Shinin wrote a good story the other day, and he talked about the changes in the voting block, and he talked about the Selig factor, which I had never even thought of, that some of the voters, and these are your peers, you know how these guys and women think, some of them said, you know, if you let Bud Selig in, and Bud Selig was there when all the steroids were being used, and it took a long time to crack down, if you let him in, you ought to let these other people in too. What is your thought about that?
Well, first off, Shinin always writes a good story. Yeah, that guy can really write. Whatever. I did not see the Bud Selig connection coming. I was on the committee, Tony, that elected Bud Selig into the Hall of Fame, and I was astonished how many of my writer friends, and I mean really good writer friends of mine, connected Bud Selig. Well, now that he's in, he oversaw the steroid era, all the PED guys should go in. I don't get that. I just don't see the logic. And yet some people use that logic, and I'm sure that is going to help PED guys from here getting in, even though Bud Selig never actually did PEDs. I think there's a big difference there. But yes, I think that is at least a factor here, and I frankly don't see why, but it is, clearly.
What, has the voting block also changed demographically? Do we have much younger people who are not as troubled by the steroids as people my age would be?
Absolutely, Tony. Some of the older guys are the old school guys, and they saw Clemens and Bonds, and they said, oh, you can't do that. I'm not voting for those guys. We have a younger, different demographic in the voters, and some of the younger guys are saying, well, I didn't even see Bonds and Clemens in their prime, and I don't care whether they cheated or not. I'm just going to do this based on the best players from the era. Those guys were the best. They're going to get my vote. And we'll see next year if anything changes when the ballot is now public. Everyone's ballot will be out there. Most of them are out there anyway. But it'll be real interesting to see if they get another major spike next year, Bonds and Clemens.
Do you think that's reasonable that everybody's ballot has to be public? Are you okay with that?
I was in the room, Tony, the baseball writers' room, when we voted on this, and people were adamant that everything we do has to be transparent. This is what we do as journalists, and it's okay. We should do this. And I, frankly, had no problem with it because, you know, where I work, I'm asked all the time, give us your ballot.
Yeah.
Publish it and tell us why you did that. I frankly think that's the least I can do here is at least explain my selections here, and I'm not always right about it, but this is what I think, and I think everyone should do that. I'm okay with that. I understand the privacy laws and rules, but I'm okay with everybody's ballot being made public.
Tim, I understand the relative softening on Bonds and Clemens, but the Sosa thing is interesting to me. Is that writers just basically saying, in your instance, we think you were made by the drugs, as where those other guys, no one's disputing their greatness. It's just sort of tainted?
Yes, Gary, I think that's part of it. And look, to me, Sammy Sosa has Hall of Fame numbers, period. But he simply was not the same player that Barry Bonds was. Barry Bonds was demonstrably better than Sammy Sosa, and so was Roger Clemens. So they're in a different category statistically, even though all three of them have Hall of Fame numbers. Bonds' numbers just dwarf so many others, including Sammy Sosa. So that has something to do with it. It's just amazing how he has vanished from the baseball scene. It's amazing to me how he's like no longer even a part, it seems, of the history of the Chicago Cubs, but he had 360 homers for them. It's just amazing that he has disappeared the way that he has.
All right, so I agree with that. And I think that anybody who's paid attention to baseball over some long period of time would probably agree that Bonds and Clemens, that Clemens is one of the five greatest pitchers of all time. Bonds is one of the five greatest hitters of all time. And their numbers are just they're ridiculously high. So I will ask you, because we are of the same ilk, have you changed? Are you voting for these guys?
Well, I voted for him every year, Tony.
Okay.
I made a decision, you know, 5 years ago that to appear not to appear as a hypocrite, at least in my mind, I had to vote for these guys. So I voted for them every year. It wasn't an easy vote. I'm not particularly proud of that vote, but it just seemed like the better option than not voting for them. So no, I haven't changed. I have been a voter for Bonds and Clemens all the way through.
Okay. I don't know what I would have done at the beginning. I think the first year I would have said no.
I would have too.
But then I would not have waited much. You know what I mean, Tim? I think I would have made a symbolic vote the first time, and then I would have put him in, because this is the Baseball Hall of Fame and they are that great. I just always believe in putting it on the plaque. Just write it that these were numbers that were suspected of performance enhancing drug use. I would have done that.
Well, it's going to have to go on the plaque, Tony.
Yeah, I think,
because someday, let's say Barry Bonds takes 25 years to get into the Hall of Fame. Let's just say, and some little kid goes by and looks at this plaque and says, "Hey, this is the all-time home run king," and it took him 25 years to get in the Hall of Fame.
Right?
What the heck is going on there? Yeah. There needs to be an explanation somewhere.
Thank you, Tim. Pleasure. Avocados, by the way, very expensive lately. I hope you're okay with that. Very expensive.
Every day of my life, somebody mentions that, including today, in the hallway.
It's wonderful.
I walk by. Love avocados also. Never said hello. Just kept on walking.
So wonderful. Thank you, Tim.
All right. See you.
Tim Kirchin, boys and girls. We will come back with
Walter
Jingles.
Johnson's own.
Walter Johnson. Yeah, WJ. We will come back with jingles, yes, and emails.
That's right. Another jingle, I believe, about the pony.
Fantastic. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
Are your ears bored when you're finished with my show each day? Are you looking for something new to listen to during your daily commute or workout? It's time to call an Audible. Audible.com is a leading provider of premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Users can sign up as an Audible listener, which gives them book credits each month for a low monthly fee. Customers download their choices and can access them on their iPhone, Android device, Kindle, iPod, or other MP3 player. This might surprise some of you, but when I drive for more than a few hours, and I'm not counting, I like to listen to nonfiction. What? I'm smart, not dumb. Previously, though, I'd often stop in the middle of one because the CDs would start rolling around the backseat of the car and I would lose one. No matter what genre of books you read, Audible has it. Audible.com carries titles in business for you small business owners like me. Chad's a fabulous bar. Classics, a nod to the English majors. Memorize a few quotes and show just how smart you are. History, romance, maybe you'll find it. Mysteries, thrillers, sci-fi and fantasy, self-development, and kids, young adult categories. Hey, we're not judging. Nobody has to know what you're listening to but you. Now I'm able to walk with my dog and listen to my favorite books, and you can too, if only Chessie would discuss each chapter with me with an eye towards language, tone, and structure. You can't make more time, but you can make the most of it. Turn your routine into something more with a free trial at Audible. Go to audible.com/Tony to start now.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Michael on a Shetland pony. Wearing a shit-eating grin is Tony. Look at that laughing at his kid now. It's almost like his children are just column prompts. You're a bad dad. Bad dad.
Jason Pugh and the incomparable amazing. Robert Berg.
I love the whinnying at the end.
Fantastically.
That's great.
You know what's great? When you get a little older, you no longer look back at this and remember feeling ashamed. You look back at this and you feel pretty happy.
Yeah. You reach an age, honestly, and I can say this as someone who was embarrassed by their parents many a time, that you just realize, you know what, if you're going to judge me because of them, then that's on you. That's just, it's not me.
It's going to come out in therapy, Michael.
You got there earlier than I did, Michael.
It's going to come out in therapy.
One of the great things in life is being able to embarrass your children.
Right.
I wish it to everyone.
And a greater thing is when it stops bothering you as the child.
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Ron Jaworski and Tim Kirkchin for coming on. I also want to thank our sponsors today, SeatGeek and Audible.com. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show, wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Stan Fleming in Ellicott City, Maryland, I have been to the Circle Bar Bee Nature Reserve in Lakeland, Florida. That, I add parenthetically, is where that stegosaurus was walking. It's a fantastic place to see a large variety of birds and, yes, alligators. There's a path that meanders through the alligator's habitat. It's a thrill. I'm going to Lakeland again next week, and I will definitely go gator sightseeing. If you don't hear from me again, you can assume the alligators won.
Gator.
From Mark Feinsand, just wanted to chime in on the Hall of Fame discussion regarding Bonds and Clemens. I voted for both of them. Saliza said he loathed both of them because of the way they treated the media. I never covered Bonds and had limited contact with him, but I did cover Clemens for several years and enjoyed dealing with him for the most part. I don't think his personality has anything to do with him not getting in. Counting the days until Danny Espinosa is on the ballot.
Next year.
From Noah Petro, or Petro, in the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center.
Wow.
Pin him.
Listening to Tuesday's show about Gene Cernan was particularly poignant. I worked for NASA at the Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, as a planetary geologist with many volcanologist colleagues. Wow. And I'm the deputy project scientist for Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, NASA's mission orbiting the moon since 2009. On the spacecraft, we have a camera that has taken pictures of the Apollo landing site, including where Gene walked with Jack Schmidt, the only geologist to walk on the moon. The picture shows the areas where the astronauts walked, but we can't see his daughter's initials as they are too small for us to see. While NASA hasn't landed on the moon since 1972, we study the moon to learn about how planets work. I just published a paper with Gene's crewmate, Jack Schmidt, re-examining the Apollo 17 landing site with new data, showing that there are still things we're learning about the moon, even in places we've been. If you or any other members of the gang want to visit Goddard, let me know. Free parking and food for anyone who comes. Lots of littles
road
here
trip
at NASA.
Cool.
Yes. Let me just say, if the government sold trips to the moon, there are definitely millions and billionaires who would want to do it if they could.
Oscar of Bethesda. Here's an interesting bit of news for you. Noah Rubin, U.S. tennis player who lost to Roger Federer in the second round of the Australian Open, has an older sister Jessie, who was captain of the Binghamton University tennis team.
How about that?
From Josh in Washington, D.C. Over the last couple of days, you have called Wizards backup guard Thomas Satoransky the team's first-round pick. This is interesting since it is not actually true. Satoransky was the 32nd overall pick in the 2012 NBA draft. As you dedicate so much of your free time to counting, I'm sure you can figure out where that places the pick in an NBA of 30 teams, but perhaps Gary can help you with the math if you're still unsure. Now, if you're concerned, you might have to use airtime. Is it still airtime on a podcast praising the Wizards for finding a player in the second round so good that Gary believes he might be a threat to the psyche of John Wall? Have no fear. Three picks later, the Warriors grabbed Draymond Green. You think he might have helped that team?
Heard of him.
Thanks for all the entertainment and the occasionally accurate information for life. Jared from Terre Haute, Indiana. This is Gary's math skills. Gary, I was in the ninth grade when the Challenger blew up. Chris, that was in 1986. Gary, I also remember the Reagan assassination. I was in the sixth grade. While the undisclosed location continues to vex me, I now believe I've discovered the answer to Gary's math issues. The Reagan assassination attempt was in March of 1981. That is 5 years earlier than the Challenger. However, the difference between ninth grade and sixth grade is three. So which of the intervening grades did Super G retake twice?
Well, it took me a while to get past 10th, which is why that happened.
Fantastic. Sean in York, Pennsylvania. It was January 28th, 1986, 3 days after my birthday. My friends and I went to the library to read magazines like Car and Driver during the second half of lunch. When we entered the library, we were shushed like never before. TVs were on in the far corner playing something over and over again. We knew there was a launch and gradually came to realize something was wrong. We thought the shuttle had to ditch in the ocean or land at that emergency landing strip in Spain, but we were wrong. That was the day my parents and I were to meet with the guidance counselor at African Road Junior High School in Vestal, New York. Vestal, New York, which I know well, to plan my high school years. Dad was visibly upset when I met them in the guidance office. The TK connection here in a place near Binghamton called Kirkwood, New York, and that is right over the border on 81. Like, as you go north on 81, Kirkwood is the first town. was a company called Link Flight Simulation. Their founder created the flight simulator during World War II. They also built the flight simulators for many NASA projects, including the space shuttle. I learned from Dad years later, the entire plant fell silent that day and then set to work preparing all the shuttle simulators to be used to figure out exactly what had happened.
Wow.
We have amazing listeners.
Smart emails today.
Amazing listeners. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
You know what ought to happen to them? They ought to be stabbed by cocktail forks.
Oh, my.